Bloomberg Surveillance with Ken Pruitt and Tom Keene. If you're listening via our new Radio Plus iPhone app, did you know you can personalize the ticker that crawls across the bottom of your screen? Simply tap on Menu in the upper right, then choose Settings and Personalize My Ticker. If you don't have the Radio Plus iPhone app yet, you'll want to download it. It's free via the iTunes App Store.
Sean Egan with us, and a perfect time to speak to him as we have the official headlines out of Greece. Lucas Papademos of MIT, but of course of the ECB, named the new Greece premier. He has been asked by the presidency to form a government. Professor Papademos, teaching at Columbia, among other schools over the years, degrees from the Massachusetts Institute of Technology and Physics, electrical engineering, his PhD in 1978 from MIT. Sean Egan, good morning.
Good morning.
You say Greece is irrelevant. Italy is not. What do we need to see from Italy in the next 24 hours?
You need to see bond yields to continue to decline. They're down today. Begs the question of whether or not it's the ECB buying that has pushed them down over the last 24 hours.
When you look at a downgrade of whatever level and whatever nation, what detail do you look at most? Is it tax receipts? Is it spending? Is it ability to carry the debt at a new higher yield? What's the dynamic right now in your analysis of Europe?
Probably the paramount ratio is debt to GDP, which incorporates most of those items you just mentioned. In the case of Italy, a major problem has been their inability to grow, and therefore the denominator is not increasing while the numerator, that is debt, is growing fairly rapidly.
Does France deserve that AAA rating? It seems like they're fighting tooth and nail to hold on to it.
They are not rated AAA. We don't rate them AAA.
Well, other people do.
I can't account for their actions.
Okay. So what do you rate France?
That's very political, Sean.
Yes, it is. Well, what is your rating on France?
I believe we're at single A plus and probably heading south.
One of our guests this morning, we checked in with James Shug, an economist at Westpac Bank based in London, and he said the solution to the problem in Europe is for the European Central Bank to print more money and the Germans should just get over it. Is that what it's going to take?
That's simplistic and dangerous.
What would you do?
The IMF has a well-worn playbook for solving these problems, and I believe that the best solution is to use the typical IMF approach to getting a country back in shape.
Well, you look at the well-worn playbook, and I think Carl Weinberg's on the same page as you are, Sean. This is a mixture of fiscal policy, economics, with a big dash of politics involved as well. What I've noticed is the grimness off the microphone or off the TV camera of so many guests. What are the politicians missing here that people like you, and I think of Dominique Constum and others, what are they missing here in the grimness of the financial community versus the proverbial can down the road of the politicians?
There are two primary mistakes. One is that they don't understand the underlying problem. Two is they are blinded by their supposed ability to manipulate the markets. There's been about 10 trial balloons that have been sent up, and all of them have failed to date. I think that it's unfortunate that they've quickly lost credibility in the market.
Sean, you mentioned Germany unwilling to jeopardize its credit rating. I think that's common knowledge. And the distinction here is the state of the banks, the German banks versus the French banks. What is the state of European banking as a general statement?
Miserable.
When you look at the miserable sense of it, and if you pick on the French banks, which Ken mentioned earlier, do you have transparency as a rating agency, or is it a mystery to you?
We do not, and in fact, the lack of transparency extends beyond just the European banks. It also includes the U.S. banks, particularly in the area of their non-physical exposures, their credit default swaps, their shorting, their total exposures to various credits. I think we're in the infancy in terms of financial reporting for non-physical instruments.
Within that, it's a loaded statement that you have there. What do you presume to be the state of the credit default swap market? People buy these things. Somebody's on the other side of the trade. Who is that other person? Is it a bank in France or a bank in Austria?
You don't know, and that's a big part of the problem. You don't know whether or not the credit default swaps will be triggered, who is standing behind them, and whether or not there's going to be a fair settlement of the exposures.
And within that, and this is the critical thing I'm trying to drive at, folks, is this idea of the mystery out there about them. Does the study that you have change because we're having voluntary default, which isn't really a default, which doesn't trigger these derivative instruments?
You put your finger on the dysfunctional aspect of the credit default swap market, whereby a group of major banks can define whether or not there was a default or not a default. In our view, if creditors don't receive full payment on time, then it's a default. We've had Greece at the D level for quite some time for the simple reason that we don't see any way that Greece could pay its creditors in full and on time.
Where's Italy right now? What rating do you have on Italy?
Oh, I think we have about a double B or double B plus rating.
Remarkable what they're going through, Sean, with what's a pretty good rating. I mean, it's not triple A, but I thought you'd say B or worse.
Well, actually, it's on review right now.
Would you like to make some news right now, Mr. Egan?
No, I don't want to.
Yeah, I'm being funny where you don't have that luxury of it. If you look at the credit default swap market then and the mystery of it, do you have any idea the notional or hedged size of that mystery?
Unfortunately not, and I said that this area of the market is in its infancy. We need that information, and the assumption is that in the case of the major American financial institutions, that despite Dodd-Frank, they have the support of the U.S. government. Hopefully that won't have to be tested. We're not so sure of that assumption in Europe, particularly with the weaker countries, and I'd put certainly the periphery countries at the top of that list, but that list might extend also to France.
And then you've got recession on top of this. Have you worked through how lesser GDP, lower tax receipts affects your rating dynamics?
It becomes a death spiral if it's not managed properly, because austerity measures result in a decline in GDP, and the decline in GDP makes that debt-to-GDP ratio that much weaker, which triggers additional austerity, and it becomes an unworkable situation. That's why we're back to where we started with the IMF playbook for rescuing companies or countries.
And if there's a recession in Europe?
There already is a recession in Europe, if you adjust some of the figures, and it's that's why you have to be very careful in the way you handle this difficulty. The miner's canary is the yield. We pointed to clients to this, is the yield on the Italian debt, and we pointed them to it probably about 6 weeks ago or so, and it's gone north since that time, so we're fairly concerned.
Well, in the face of all this, Sean, how are banks going to recapitalize by next summer?
They're not.
Okay, they're not going to recapitalize. And do you presume mergers like we saw in Belgium, where it's essentially, I'm going to use this phrase with respect to shotgun merger, how do you presume that the banks that you follow will do their workout or their restructuring or their liquidation?
That is something that we're working on right now. We'll probably be coming out with something either over the by Friday or else over the weekend, what the next wave is. There's been three waves to this credit crisis, and That is, the first one is our assumption that Greece could not repay its debt and that the recovery rates were going to be significantly lower. Fortunately, we warned clients about that, and clients made some money. The second wave, and it was documented in Barron's, we warned our readers before that, and that is that the major European banks are going to be in significant difficulty because they couldn't absorb the losses from the sovereign countries. A lot of those banks that we flagged were down between 40% and 75%, with Commerce Bank at the top of the list. The third wave is the problems in with Italy, Spain, and Portugal. And since we can't short the banks very easily, the best way to play that was the CDS and also shorting the bonds. And that we're in the midst of that right now. The fourth wave is on the horizon, and we're working through that as we speak.
I want to go into the short-term space then. My experience, Sean, is we can talk about a two-year, five-year. You've got an average duration for Italy or the Czech Republic, whatever. But then you slam in short and you get to the trust meters like Euribor, OIS, and you've got your other more sophisticated ones than me. They're elevated. Do you expect them to blow out showing distrust, or can they stabilize here?
No, we're already at the unsustainable point. In fact, if you have an economy that's not growing, and that certainly is the case in Italy, if they have to pay even 2% for their debt, that they're slipping. And obviously, we're well north of 2%.
If President Draghi called you today, one final question. If President Draghi called you today, what would be your advice?
It would be to look at the IMF. They've been through this before, and stop the hubris and myopia that has characterized the actions by EU politicians to date.
Sean Egan, Egan Jones, thank you so much.
Listen to Bloomberg Surveillance weekday mornings at 7 on Bloomberg 1130 in New York, or on Sirius and XM Satellite Radio Channel 113. Copyright 2011.